everybody, it's Dr. Billy Williams. I absolutely appreciate you guys being here for the second session of Ice Cream Lessons Faith-Based Leaders Tend to Learn the Hard Way. The first night was on income and money and covering your weaknesses. Tonight is on ego, emotion, expectations, and communication. As a reminder, our training will consist of key thoughts, short, simple-to-grasp statements, biblical support of the key thoughts. We'll give examples that directly relate to the key thoughts. We're going to have some mentoring tips and action plans or suggestions of things to do. And finally, guys, I want you to download the training handout that's associated with this session, and you simply go to inspireanation.org, www.inspireanation.org, click on the Recorded Sessions tab, and then you'll see each session, session one, session two, and you'll see a link that says click here to download the training handout. But if you want to follow along, download that training handout so that you can follow along with what we're doing. So again, ego, emotion, and expectations. I am super excited about our guest speakers tonight. We have three just phenomenal guest speakers. We've got Brian Williams. We've got Tom Baker. We've got my mentor, Ron Allen. And they're going to talk about, from an ego, emotion, expectation, and communication basis, about their faith, about their businesses, and what they've done to make their businesses successful. So with that being said, let me go ahead and get started, because I'm going to talk about the first 25, 30 minutes, do our lesson, and then we're going to bring on each speaker. Ego, emotion, and expectation, the E in ice cream. This is our first topic. Our ego is built on things that we do or say. Arrogance is what we refuse to do or say. Emotion is how we feel. It's what we hide or show to the rest of the world. And then expectations. This is what we think or believe should happen. So you need to understand those definitions, and I'll say them again. Ego, things that we do or say. Arrogance, what we refuse to do or say. Emotion, how we feel, what we hide or show to the rest of the world. And then expectation, what we think or believe should happen. There's good ego and arrogance, and there's bad ego and arrogance. And ego and arrogance work parallel. They always work together, but they work in parallel. Our good ego and arrogance is driven by our faith, our values, our passions, our successes, and our confidence. Our bad ego and arrogance, which is an exaggerated sense of self-importance, and it's driven by our wants, desires, failures, insecurities, and fears. Now, we can trace this all the way back to the Garden of Eden, where Eve's ego was activated by Satan's lie that she could be like God. God doesn't want you to know good from evil. God just is trying to keep you from being like him. And that's Genesis 3:5. That's our supporting scripture on that, Genesis 3:5. So again, there's always good ego and arrogance, and there's always bad ego and arrogance. And ego and arrogance run parallel of each other, and they always work as a team. Ego and arrogance always work as a team. Our good ego and arrogance is when our thoughts and actions are based on biblical principles and Jesus' teachings. Our bad ego and arrogance occurs when we put our own wants and desires before God's principles and before Jesus' teachings. So it's real simple to control. It just takes a little bit of discipline. Now, ego and arrogance is the second most expensive item you will ever own. Of course, discipline, lack of discipline, is the number one most expensive item that you will ever own. But ego and arrogance is the second most expensive item you will ever own. So what's the opposite of bad ego or bad arrogance? It's not good ego and good arrogance. It's humility. The opposite of bad ego and arrogance is humility to God's principles and Jesus' teachings. And my scriptural support of that is Proverbs 22:4 that says, humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth, honor, and life. And that's because when we have humility, when we're humble, and we fear the Lord, so we do his practices, we do his will, we follow his principles and his teaching, and we follow those teachings of Jesus, then, of of course we're going to bring, it's going to bring wealth and honor and life, because we're not going to screw it up. You know, my kids play sports. My son is a big tennis player. My daughter plays volleyball. My other daughter plays basketball, and I got a soccer player and all that in the group. And the one thing that's always constant is, a lot of times it's not the fact that you are better than the other person. It's just that the other person makes more mistakes, especially in tennis or volleyball or something like that. A lot of times it's not that you're beating the other team as much as the other team is beating themselves. They're making the mistakes. It's the same thing in our life. Sometimes God doesn't have to beat us, or the devil doesn't have to beat us. We're beating ourselves because we're not humble, because we don't have humility, and we don't fear the Lord. Since we don't fear the Lord, we don't follow those principles and guidelines and teachings that are going to bring us wealth, honor, and life. And guys, that's something I had to learn the hard way. I really thought I could figure this out on my own. I'm smart, I'm talented, man, I'm good. I can do this all on my own, until I start realizing, until I follow His way, until I follow His teachings and principles, none of this matters, because I'm not going to be good at anything. So none of it matters. And then my second scriptural support on the opposite of bad ego and bad arrogance is humility to God's principles and Jesus' teachings is 1 Peter 5:5. 1 Peter 5:5 says, God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. 1 Peter 5:5. God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. One of the things that I had to learn when we talk about being humble and being having humility and trying to control our bad ego and our bad arrogance and all those things that are screwing us up, especially in business, is that I need to write down things, not just things that are important to me, but things that are important to the rest of my team, things that are important to the running of my business. The more written processes and accountability you have in place, the more control you have over your ego and arrogance. See, processes don't have an ego. Processes are not arrogant. Written processes allow you to go back and review and remove your own insecurities and fears and concerns and all this other stuff. So again, written processes, first of all, they hold you accountable. They help you to be more accountable. But they also help you to control your ego and your arrogance. That's the number one reason that every business, I don't care how big you are, I don't care how small you are, every business needs a board of advisors or a board of directors. Now, the federal government made us have a board of directors for corporations, for C corporations. But for S corporations and LLCs and sole proprietors and, you know, that work from home mom and dad who's still a sole proprietor, but a lot of times we forget we need a board of advisors. And I truly believe that the number one reason that we need a board of advisors or a board of directors when we run a business is to help us control our ego and our arrogance. So you have to put people, tools, systems and processes in place that will influence and control your ego, your arrogance, your emotions, your expectations, both for yourself and for your business. So guys, look at your own business. If you don't have written processes, I mean, especially those money-making processes, those revenue-producing processes, those key performance indicators, if those things are not written down, you're not doing yourself any favors. And if you don't have a board of advisors around you, and that could be a couple of your friends from church, that could be just somebody you trust, but if you don't have a board of advisors, you're not controlling your ego and your arrogance. You're letting it run crazy. Okay? So I'm not going to spend too much time on that because we have our speakers that I want to get to. So let's talk about emotions. Emotions are what we feel and what we show to other people. So in Proverbs 25:28, it says, a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. So in other words, anyone or anything can continually get to them, can continually disrupt their day, can continually steal their resources, steal their joy, steal everything. So Proverbs 25:28, a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. You're exposed. When you can't control your own emotions, you are exposed. And anyone can push that button. And you don't want that. Because anything you put emotion in front of is magnified. So if I put emotion in front of a problem, the problem looks 10 times worse than what it really is. If I put emotion in front of a solution, the solution looks so much better than what it really is. If I put emotion in front of a situation, the situation just seems so much worse than what it really is. So anything we put emotion in front of is magnified, including our passions. So if you're going to get excited about something, get excited about your passions. Going back to last week's lesson, and I pointed out the five purposes that God gives us for business. So let me review those. Number one is an outlet for our passion. God allows us to be in business and allows us to have successful businesses and allows us to want to do business because it's an outlet for our passion. So number one, business is an outlet for our passion. Number two is our product. So it's the five P's for you guys that are remembering, or maybe you didn't download last week's handout. And if you haven't downloaded last week's handout, I know I'm jumping around, so let me just say this. If you haven't downloaded last week's handout or this week's handout, go to the recorded session page of www.inspirenation.org. Look under ice cream. You'll see recorded sessions, and that's where the handouts are. So anyway, let me jump back on topic. So the five P's, the five purposes that God gives us for business. Number one, passion. Number two, product. God wants us to put out a product that benefits the community, that benefits our fellow man, that benefits the church, that benefits all the people that are going to touch that product. He wants us to help others. The third P, philanthropy. God wants us to give back to the church and give back to our religious organizations and give back to the neighborhood and give back to the group, to better man, to better our families and communities. God wants that. That's philanthropy. So number one, passion. Number two, product. Number three, philanthropy. Number four, profits. Because if you don't have profits, you're not going to feel that passion that you should feel about your business. You're not going to put out the products that you should put out because you don't have any money to put them out or keep them out. You can't be philanthropic when you're broke. So the fourth P of why, of the main purposes that God allows us to be in business is philanthropy. And then number five is personification. He wants us and our business to be a personification of his teachings, to be a personification of his principles, to be a personification of his rules that he tells us to live by. So going back to our lesson here on emotion, passion. You see, we're supposed to pursue our passions. Once we pursue our passions, we rarely feel down or depressed. We rarely feel like, oh, I don't want to go to work today. It's when you haven't pursued your passions that you run into those problems. You see, passion is the fuel that drives our happiness, and it is the main purpose that God gives us for starting a business. So if you're in business, especially if you own your own business, and you have no passion for that business, then you're not even following the purpose that God gave us for business. So emotion and passion. But emotion is also part of our mood. Okay, Proverbs 14:29 is my scriptural support. Proverbs 14:29 says, whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. In other words, foolishness. When you're angry and you're not slow to anger, you look foolish. You sound foolish. You are foolish. So we need to control our emotions. We need to control our moods. Now, moods is something that is kind of unique. And a lot of people think, I'm in a bad mood. Well, why are you in a bad mood? Well, usually we're in a bad mood because your mood is a reflection of what you think will happen in the future, what you think will happen going forward. Usually your mood is rarely a result of something in the past. It's only a result of something in the past when you believe that past will continue into the present or continue into the future. So if you're in a bad mood, it's generally because you believe your current situation and your past is going to continue into your future. Oh, I got to put up with him again. Oh, here we go. She about to start this again. It's always the same old thing. So now we're in a bad mood. And that's why you need to shy away from people that are always in a bad mood. Because, again, they believe that their past and their current situation are going to continue into the future. And so when they're in a bad mood, they're going to try to share their future with you. They're going to try to put you in a bad mood. And a lot of times they remember things from your past that they can trigger to help you join them in the current situation and going forward. Mm-hmm. It's just like that time when you, and that, I guess that's why that girl was, just like you told me you were going over to, because they know that there are things in your past that they can trigger that will drive you into a bad mood and allow that mood to link up with their mood, and both of y'all can go into the future upset, ticked off. So you need to shy away from that. Now, how do you help control your moods and your anger and all those different things? Well, all of the people in your life are going to fall into one of three emotional categories. They're either going to be energy makers, energy savers, or energy takers. An energy maker keeps the fuel tank, our emotional fuel tank, they keep it full. They seem to get us. They seem to understand how we think. They genuinely enjoy having conversations about our ideas and about our passions and about the things that we're doing. That's why your mentors, your proteges, and even your board of advisors should fall into this energy maker category. So take a quick assessment. How many energy makers do you have around you? Most of the time, we don't have as many as we need, or we don't have as many as we want. And what you'll find is it takes a lot of fuel to move a big ship. So the more successful you become, the more projects you take on, the bigger your image and your status becomes. In order to help you maintain God's principles, you need energy makers around you. Doesn't mean you need a bunch of people around you. It means you need a lot of energy makers around you so that you can fuel that passion and fuel those emotions and fuel those things that are going to keep you focused on God's will. But the most important type of energy maker you can have around you is another faith-based person. Okay, because they're going to help remind you of where your passions come from to begin with. So those are energy makers. Now, energy savers, these are people or tools. Doesn't even have to be a person. It can be a tool or system. And they perform many of the tasks that we normally would do in our business, but we have to make sure that but they end up doing it for us. So a lot of things we normally would do, our energy savers will do it for us. Now, a lot of times we think of our staff, oh, these are my energy savers. These are my energy savers. But here's the problem with that, guys. We're talking business. Be careful not to have so many energy savers that that all they do is split work instead of having important work of their own. I can't tell you how many times I've seen an insurance agency, because, you know, I'm in the insurance field. I've seen insurance agents hire three or four staff. They don't bring on a new lead source for that staff. They don't bring on a new project for that staff. They don't bring on any kind of marketing or advertising campaign that they want that staff to do. They just hire two or three new staff and split the work that the other staff was already doing. So now they don't have an important project of their own. You're sitting there paying triple for the same amount of work that was already happening. So when we talk about our energy savers, you have to be really smart in business to make sure that every energy saver has their own important purpose in your life and in your business. And then energy takers. These are people, processes, tools that consistently have issues or problems. So having them around offers very little value. You have to be careful because energy takers and money takers, they're always around, always. You never, ever have to wonder, where are my money takers? Where are my energy takers? They are right there beside you. Hey, you turn over, they're like, hey, how you doing? So you have to be really careful that you don't allow them to consume your business or your emotional resources, not just your business resources, but you don't allow them to consume your emotional resources. And I can't tell you how many business owners can't run their business because their energy takers are sucking the life out of them. And that could be a family member. Sometimes that's the person sitting right there beside you at work. They're sucking the life out of you. And if you don't surround yourself with enough energy makers and enough faith-based energy makers to counter that, man, it's a rough day. No wonder you're in a bad mood. Everyone's sucking the life out of you. You don't have anybody helping to fire you up. So now you got to go in and deal with this going forward every single day. No wonder you're in a bad mood. So how do we even control that? How do we identify that emotional response and all that we have? Well, I have this thing called NERP. N is in Nancy, E is in Edward, R is in Robert, P is in Paul. NERP. It's called, that's short for Negative Emotional Response Pathway. See, what happens is we start out with things that irritate us or annoy us. And sometimes they can even make us uncomfortable. So things that irritate us, annoy us, or make us uncomfortable. And then as that continues to go over time, or even if it has intensity, maybe it didn't happen a long time, but it was something so important that it really got my goat this one time. You know, you slapped my daughter, or you call me a name, or you stole from me, or you whatever. So even though it didn't happen a lot, it was high intensity when it did happen. And now I look at that. So I'm irritated, but now I look and go, I can't do anything about it. Maybe it was your boss who stole your idea. Or maybe it was a coworker who doesn't do their work. They don't pull their work. They don't pull their weight at work. And you know they're not pulling their weight. And you try to let the boss know or you try to do whatever, but no one seems to care. Well, see, what happens is over time, that irritation becomes a sense of helplessness and hopelessness. So it starts out as irritation, and then it becomes a sense of helplessness. I can't change this. Hopelessness. It will never change. And then it becomes frustration. And frustration simply leads to anger. The more frustrated you become, the closer you are to angry. So prolonged frustration leads to anger. And if that prolonged frustration and anger last long enough, it becomes depression. So anger is a mental, physical, or emotional laziness or undisciplined action. So when we get angry, we have one of two ways that we deal with it. We say, you know what? I'm not going to do anything. Forget it. I'm not taking out that trash. I'm not turning in that report. I'm not doing anything because I'm angry. I'm mad. So we just go, I'm not going to do anything. But then there's also another phase of it that we can go into called undisciplined. And this is when we do something other than what we should do. So while we are supposed to take out the trash, we go, yeah, I'm not taking out that trash. In fact, I'm going to take this and put it over here. And it's all because of an irritant. Something irritated us. And then it kept irritating us to the point that we felt this sense of helplessness and hopelessness. And then after we felt that sense of helplessness and hopelessness long enough, we became frustrated. And the longer you're frustrated, the more angry you become. And the more angry you become, the more it manifests itself one of two ways. Either lazy, where I don't do anything or don't do enough of something, or undisciplined, where I do something other than what I'm supposed to do. So a lot of times, this is why people cheat on their spouses. This is why they just let their business go to hell in a handbasket. This is why they let their staff run the business as opposed to them running the business, because they just don't even want to deal with it. They abdicate their leadership because they're so angry about what's happening in the agency that they are in the business that they just go, forget it. You know what? Forget it. Y'all do what you want to do. I don't care. And you have to control that, because if you don't control that, then you're not going to have the expectations that you should have as a business leader. You're not going to have the expectations of your people that you should have, and you're not going to have the expectations of your business. You see, people don't disappoint you. Your expectations of people is what disappoints you. In order for you to even have an expectation, you got to get rid of anger. And the only way you can get rid of anger and frustration and irritation is write it down. Because remember, written processes, written rules, written guidelines don't have any ego. They don't have any emotion. And the expectation is always there that you're going to follow the written word. That's why the Bible has lasted 2,000 plus years, because it's a written, the word of Jesus has lasted 2,000 plus years because it's written down. If it wasn't written down, it would have gone the way of the best American Indian religion in the world. Can anybody name that? No. Because it's not written down anywhere. Same thing in your business, guys. I'm hoping I'm piecing all this together for you. Because this started out with ego, emotion, and expectations in your business. Good ego, bad ego. Good arrogance, bad arrogance. Ego is what we do. Arrogance is what we refuse to do. So you can have a good ego that's biblically based, Jesus teachings, God driven. You can have a good arrogance, which is, I'm not going to cheat, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to steal, I'm not going to deny God, I'm not going to, you know, get up in the morning without saying my prayers, I'm not going to just walk down the street and do, that's good arrogance. There's some things you don't want to do. But then there's bad ego and bad arrogance, and those are things that are driven by our own weaknesses and insecurities and fears. And there's bad arrogance. I'm not taking out that trash. I'm not bending down to help you up. I'm not going to reach back to you. I got mine. They need to get theirs. So we have to be really careful of our ego, emotion, and expectations, not just from the business standpoint, but even from a biblical standpoint. So I've got some message for business leaders. This is for the actual business leaders. First and foremost, if you have not personally trained your staff on a process in your business, you shouldn't have an expectation that they know how to do it. In the insurance industry, I see this all the time. People will hire a licensed staff person, bring them into the agency, never train them, assume that the last person trained them, assume that they know because they have a license, not give them any sense of direction or guidance, and then when that person doesn't live up to the expectation, even though there's no history to support it, the expectation that that leader has, all of a sudden, oh man, this staff person sucks. No, leader. You, as a leader, didn't do your job. If you have not personally trained your staff on a process, you shouldn't have an expectation that they know how to do it. If you don't have written processes and tasks that your staff can review and refer to for guidance, you shouldn't have an expectation that because they did it correctly for a while, that they'll always do it correctly. Ask yourself this, business leaders. How often do you have to refer back to the Bible to remind you of what you're supposed to do? And we're Christians. So now take an employee. Shouldn't they have a place that they can refer back to? Shouldn't they have written rules and guidelines that they can refer back to? Another message for my business leaders. If you have not role-played a conversation at least 5 times with your staff, you should not have an expectation that they're going to say it the correct way to your customers. How many times have you read a scripture, but you couldn't recite it to someone when you were talking to them or when the scripture was needed? You just couldn't remember the verse or the chapter or even the book that it was in. You knew somewhere in the Bible it said something about us. And we read the Bible all the time. But imagine if your team comes in, you've never role-played anything with them. You've never sat down and say, hey, if this situation pops up, here's what we do and here's what we say. Not just I'm going to tell you, but let me hear you say it. You know, with my kids, I make them repeat every order that I give them. If I say, look, you're going to take out the trash tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. All right, son, repeat to me what I said. You said you're going to take out the trash tomorrow morning at 6:30. No, I didn't. I said you're going to take out the trash tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. Oh, okay, well, repeat to me what I said. You said I need to take out the trash tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Okay, good, we got this. Because If I haven't role-played that conversation with you and heard you repeat that conversation to me at least five times, then I shouldn't have an expectation that you're going to do it right when my customer has that situation. So ego, emotion, and expectations. I'm trying to give you some real-world teaching, some real-world application within your business. Now, that was for my business leaders. Now I want to talk to the employees, to the staff. Guys and girls, in a smaller business operation, a lot of times the owner hires more for companionship than for actual business production. So the business owner doesn't just want you to be there. They want you to be there so they're not alone. So a lot of times it's really easy for you to take advantage of that situation. But here's the deal. Over time, the expectation of you being there will become more valuable to the business owner than it will to you. And then you're going to feel underpaid and overworked because you're doing your job and then emotionally feeding the business owner, becoming the energy maker for the business owner, doing all of the work for the business owner, and they're happy because you're there with them. But you are starting to feel underpaid and overworked. So while it's easy to take advantage of that situation, you're going to be financially better off if you push to have written processes in place that you can always refer to. And I'm talking written compensation plans, written guidelines, written rules, an employee handbook, a job aid book, because when that person starts to forget your true value and start to complain about you're not doing anything, you're just sitting around here, when the infatuation or the desire to have a companion has worn off, you better have something that you can refer back to, or else it's going to be a very difficult time in that business. All right? So let's get to communication. I got about 5 minutes here. We're going to bring on our speaker. So our first speaker is going to be Brian. Brian, go ahead and get ready. I'll bring you on here in about 5 or 6 minutes. We're going to talk about communication. And under communication, I'm going to ask you this one question. Is your message bigger than God's message? Is your message bigger than God's message? There are 5 deadly sins of communication. Guys, if you have not downloaded the handout, please go to InspireNation.org under the ice cream tab. You're going to see recorded sessions, and then you'll scroll down and see session 2. Just download the handout there. 5 deadly sins of communication. Number 1, not listening to and heeding God's written words first. Now, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I'm not one of those folks that, you know, I hear God talking to me through the wall, and I hear God's voice boomed out to me while I was driving in the car, and, you know, people I talk to says, you know, God's word came to me this way. I'm not one of those folks. I'm not. I have to hear God's word through his written word. So not listening to and heeding God's written words first, before we start a project, before we start anything, I promise you, you pick up the Bible and you turn to any chapter in the Bible, it's going to guide you to something that you need to know or something you need to heed. So the first of the 5 deadly sins of communication is not listening to and heeding God's written words first. The second deadly sin of communication is giving everyone's communication the same priority. Everyone's. So you know you are supposed to identify money makers and you're supposed to identify energy makers. And we have, but we get information from them or get communication from them, an email, a text message, or a phone call or something like that. And we give their communication the exact same priority as our money takers, as our energy takers, as the people in our life who are adding no value, as our non-faith-based business partners, as our non-faith-based advisors, as our non-faith-based companions. But we give everyone's communication the same priority. So I'll call people, and I'm an energy maker for them. I'm a money maker for them, and I'll say, hey, did you get my email? Yeah, I did, you know, but I didn't get a chance to read it because I got so many emails that day. Are you kidding me right now? Are you really putting me in that same category? And we do that with God a lot of times. We will give God the exact same priority as things that are not godly. We will put God's communication to us in the exact same communication pile as the 500 credit card offers we got, or the, you know, 2,000 emails that came in that day from junk, from spam. So we won't pick up the phone and call someone a faith-based partner or a faith-based advisor, even when we need it. Because you know what? I don't have time. And I hear this all the time. People say, I don't have time. And I tell them it's because we're so busy failing that we don't have time to be successful. We're so busy doing all those things that are taking our time away from our success that we don't have time to actually do the things that make us successful. We're so busy listening to everyone else that we don't have time to listen to God. So second deadly sin, giving everyone's communication the same priority. Third sin, not thoroughly reading or listening to valuable communication from our money makers and our energy makers. People tend to skim over communication from people that they admit, these are important people in my life, but guess what? I'm just going to skim over your information. So they don't thoroughly read or listen to valuable communication. Fourth, not asking enough questions. How many opportunities have you missed out on because you only had half or less of the information? And the reason you only had half or less is because you didn't ask enough questions. So the fourth deadly sin, not asking enough questions. Fifth deadly sin, not having defined times to communicate with important customers, prospects, referral partners, money makers, energy makers. And that includes using manual schedules, but you can also use technology and pre-written email templates and text message templates. You know, a lot of times people will text me and I've got the little pre-written text in there that says, I'm busy, I'll call you back later, or, you know, I'm in a meeting right now, but I'll call you as soon as I get out of the meeting. Well, obviously, I don't have time to sit there and type that out, but that should be pre-written. What's the same thing? When we don't have defined times to read God's Word, when we don't have defined times to communicate with our important faith-based brethren or sistren, when we don't have defined times to call customers, prospects, referral partners, money makers, energy makers, we just let it happen. Guess what? It never happens. Remember what I said last week? When the devil can't make you do bad, he tries to make you believe you're too busy to do good. So what are the five deadly sins of communication again? Number one, not listening to and heeding God's written words. Number two, giving everyone's communication the same priority. Number three, not thoroughly reading or listening to valuable communication from your money makers and energy makers. Number four, not asking enough questions. How many opportunities have you missed out on because you only had half or less of the information? Number five, not having defined times to communicate with important customers, prospects, referral partners, faith-based business partners and leaders, our board of advisors, because there's technology, there's pre-written email templates, there's text messages, there's all kind of things that we can do that even if we don't have the actual time, we can make sure that the communication occurs. And sometimes that's just as important. Taking the time to set up the automated communication is just as important as doing it manually a lot of times. All right? So I'm going to finish on this. Brian, get ready. Communication is like credit. This is what I'm going to leave you with before we turn it over to Brian. Communication is like credit. No credit means no one calls you, so you have no reason to call anybody back. And a lot of businesses have no credit. They have no customers, no prospects, nobody. Phone's not ringing. You just have no credit. And then there's bad credit. Bad credit is when you don't call people back who've reached out to you, especially important people. So, yeah, I was going to call you back, but I got busy with this. I got busy with that. I got busy with this. I got busy with that. So you get bad credit with that person. Then there's slow credit. Slow credit is you call people back days or weeks later. Yeah, man, I got your message, but, you know, man, it's been a busy couple of weeks, been a busy 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah, I got your message. So now I got slow credit. And then there's average credit, where you call people back in 2 or 3 days. That's what the average person does. They call you back in 2 or 3 days. Then there's good credit. Good credit is I'm going to call you back within 24 hours. Then there's great credit. Great credit is you return calls the same day, even if it's in the evening, or even if you just have to leave a message if no one answers. But you're going to make sure that you follow up that same day with important people. So ask yourself about your business, ask yourself about you. When you're dealing with the average person out here, do you have no credit, bad credit, slow credit, average credit, good credit, or great credit? Because at the end of the day, when we talk about communication, just like we have with credit, the people with great credit spend less to get more. And the people with bad credit spend more to get less. And communication is just like credit. So how is your business set up from a credit standpoint when we talk about communication? All right, so that being said, I'm going to open it up here for my man Brian. And, okay, Brian, are you on, sir? Brian, can you hear me?
Yes, I am.
All right, fantastic. All right, Brian, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I'll ask you a couple of questions here to in line with what we're talking about tonight, and we'll get going.
Excellent. First of all, appreciate you sharing that. I have your notes downloaded, but I also completed a full page of notes on my own, so thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And with that, sure. So my name is Brian Williams. I was in corporate America in the technology space, Silicon Valley, did some things in about 10 or 12 different countries, from small startups to large Fortune 500s. And what I noticed during that time was I was working with some brilliant people. I mean, some of these names you would recognize in some of these companies. But I noticed that they failed to effectively communicate the true value of what they were trying to bring to the marketplace, right? Very smart, great products and services, but the people they were talking to really didn't thoroughly understand the products and services that were being offered. And I noticed this regardless of the country that I've been to. I've worked in 12 different countries, and I saw the same thing regardless of where I went. So I eventually left corporate America, started my own firm, made a U-turn, and went right back into companies, helping them design and deliver their sales pitches and sales presentations. We call them sales conversations. Right. And so we created a 6-step process that simplifies that for people so they can effectively and repeatedly communicate the true value that they're bringing to the marketplace. And my heart now has shifted to entrepreneurs, small business owners, like many people on this phone call, because I found that they need the help. But if you don't reside in large corporations, which is where we were spending most of our time, we weren't able to help the entrepreneurs and small business owners. So now we've created another arm of the business that just does that specifically. And I'm on this call today because, A, I'm a father, a husband, a teaching pastor, and a believer, and I happen to be a business owner as well. And I want to share as many stories and experiences, scriptures, or thoughts that I may have that may be of benefit to those who are listening.
Excellent, Brian. Excellent so much. So I'm going to start off so you can go ahead and get into your minutes, your time here. So my question to you, Brian, how has your ego, emotion, and expectation helped you and hurt you both in business and in faith?
I'm going to start with the hurt me part because I think I have a story to share on the help part, and we'll just share on the hurt. So the ego hurt me because when I first started out, I partnered with a person that I never should have partnered with. It was just an absolute disaster. And what happened was to me, the definition of ego is these thoughts or beliefs, these personal thoughts and beliefs that we have that aren't based on reality, but they feel real, right? It's a personal thought and belief that I had that it wasn't based on reality, but it felt so real. And I thought, we're going to make this thing happen. If you look at our resumes on paper, we're a great team, and we have lots of synergy and energy when we get together. But I have to say, you know, God doesn't speak to me audibly either, but I have to tell you, I did feel something in my gut, my spirit, that said, back up your truck on this one. But my ego, I was so confident in my skill and ability and his skill and ability that we continued to pursue, we continued to press in. And I've noticed when you begin to ignore the voice of God, the promptings of God, and your voice, it'll get so loud, it'll begin to overshadow what God may be speaking to you through his word, through other people, or what you may just be feeling internally. And that's exactly what happened to me. My ego got the best of me. I thought we had a great plan and a great strategy. And, you know, I got to tell you, it seemed like it was the real thing, but it turned out to be a disaster. In fact, attorneys had to get involved in order to split. It was expensive. It was painful. And fortunately, once the attorneys got involved, everything stopped. They were able to come in and just kind of put the brakes on everything, which was what I was hoping they would do. But it was a very valuable lesson learned, and it was very early on in the formation of my company. I thank God that we were able to survive it and to rebound from that. But I got to tell you, the ego, it could be very damaging, because the reason why I think ego is so damaging is because it's like using a broken GPS system. So you're making decisions based on false information. You're making a left when you should be making a right. And that's exactly what happened to me. I should have made a left when I was approached by this individual, but I decided to make a right instead because my ego told me, you guys can make this happen despite these warning signs that you're getting. So if you're in a scenario right now, or you're pursuing a scenario and there's some instinct, someone telling you something, you may have read it in a book, you may have read it in the Bible, or they may have said something that may have put you on pause, I would strongly encourage you to back up your truck and just wait. Most business deals can still happen if you add 2 to 3 more days or 2 to 3 more weeks between that ultimate decision. So my warning would just be, if you're feeling something that's putting some doubt in your mind, or maybe just a little bit of skepticism, I'd ask you to back up your truck a little bit. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Excellent, Brian. So, of course, you know, we're always going to tell you, pray on it. You got to pray on it. You got to find it in God's word. So that's excellent there. So let's talk about, and I'm just going to let you go with this, Brian, because, you know, I don't want to mess up your time at all. I want you to have every second. But tell us a little bit more about, I guess, your expectations, how that all kind of worked out for you, and, of course, communication, which is your area of expertise. So, like I said, I'm not even going to ask any more questions. You just run with the ball.
Sure. So I'll finish. I did mention that I was going to talk about, there was a time where you said good ego, bad ego. I kind of like that word. I never heard that used before. So in one case, good ego actually helped. So I'll share this in the form of a story. I was approached by, so the NFL, the guys who are inducted into the National Football League Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame, they are given a speech coach. And I was asked to coach one of the guys who was inducted into the Hall of Fame to help him with his Hall of Fame speech. So my line of business is sales communication, or presentations and communication, right? So he called and asked, and we began having discussions. And along the way, it turns out he happens to be a pastor up in the area in which he lives. And he asked me if I ever blessed people through my business. And I said, okay, well, you know, what do you mean by bless people through my business? And he asked, well, do you just kind of are a blessing to them and just help them by just helping them without charging them? Now, I'm thinking, okay, this guy happens to be a multimillionaire, right? Played in the NFL for like 13 years, and he's being inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame, went to the Super Bowl, and he's asking me, a startup business owner at the time, will I be willing to work for free? So my brain just was not processing this guy. I mean, that's just, I don't understand what you're talking about right now. So, you know, I begin to continue the conversation, and we had a follow-up phone call. And between the next phone call, as Billy just suggested, I just prayed and said, God, you know, this makes no sense to me. I'm in the building phase of my business, and I have a multimillionaire who could afford to pay any rate that I charge. He's asking to not pay anything. And I just didn't want to have any part to do with it. But in this case, I put my ego to the side. It was tough to do, guys. I got to tell you this. I didn't respond in like 2 or 3 days, okay? I pushed my ego to the side and said, you know what, God, there's nothing in me that wants to do this for free. However, I feel like you're telling me to do it, and so I'm going to do it anyway despite how I feel. And we got to be careful with emotions, right? Because when emotions go up, intelligence usually goes down. So I had to put my emotion to the side, put my ego to the side, and decided to do what I felt God was telling me to do. And then I said, well, I'm not getting paid anything, so I'm going to go to the Hall of Fame ceremony, and I'm going to leverage this opportunity as much as I possibly can since I'm not being paid. So I said, I'm going to get a photo op. There are lots of, like, stars and musicians and professional athletes that are there because they're friends with, you know, these athletes are friends with other athletes and entertainers. So a lot of people that were there, and I got some pictures, so I'm going to post these and tell some stories behind them. And I got the guy that I actually coached, the NFL Hall of Fame guy, I got a photo opportunity with him, and I'm standing there to get the photo taken. I was going to make a lot of posts about it. And I'm standing there, and we're posing, and there's a long line of people waiting, and my camera does not work. Right. What are the chances of that happening? And so I had to pay to get to the event. I had to pay my airfare, hotel. So I'm down like, I don't know, $1,100 on this whole deal. So I fly back home, and I am so frustrated. Like, God, what was that all about? I did put my ego to the side. I got back home, and I got a phone call from a friend who said, hey, I was at dinner last night and with a friend, and he said, we were watching the Hall of Fame speeches, and your guy got up and did his speech, and he said, the guy I was with said, man, that was the best Hall of Fame speech ever. So my buddy is with his friend at dinner, right, and that friend happens to be the president of a really successful company that only works with billionaires. Really interesting what they do. So my buddy says, hey, you know who coached that guy who's doing that speech, that athlete? He said, a buddy of mine, Brian Woody, he's the guy who coached him. And so the friend who's the president of a company says, wow, if he's that good, maybe he can help us. That led to another conversation, and that conversation led to a 2-year contract, which is the biggest contract we've ever signed, very lucrative, and we did were able to do a great work, and that contract is still in place. So the point is, when we put our ego to the side, and God knows what he's doing, he's asking us to trust him, even when it doesn't make sense. Because I got to tell you that if you go to any business school, they will tell you, do not work for free. It makes absolutely no sense. But God is defined by his own rules and his own system. And I listened to him in this case, and it was a very productive, very lucrative opportunity in which we become great friends with the people in which we work with. So that's an example of where the ego moved to the side can be an absolute blessing when we choose God's will over our own. So the one other part that I wanted to touch on here is another Billy had mentioned about how do you communicate in a business world while staying true to your faith. Two points come to mind. One point would be that I believe that we are believers. So we're not Christians on Sunday and then business owners on Monday. I believe I'm a Christian on Sunday, on Monday, and Tuesday. That is the higher good, the higher priority. Winky Prattney has this thing called the absolute highest good. There's a lot of good in the world, but there's an absolute highest good. And I believe that the highest good is that I'm a believer wherever I go. That's who I am. It's not what I do. So that's one way to answer that question. And then secondly, I believe that words are the most powerful force in the universe. I am absolutely amazed by the power of communication. God spoke, and everything we see was created through words. They're very powerful. Wars are started and ended through words or communication. It's such a powerful entity that if we harness its power, it can dramatically impact our businesses. So what I decided to do is I started studying books like How the Brain Learns, cognitive research on how the brain processes information, the psychology of how adults make buying decisions, and those form the platform for the business in which I run today, helping entrepreneurs, small business owners effectively communicate the value proposition to those that they come in contact with, be it email, face-to-face, phone, conversation, sales presentation, it doesn't matter. And so that communication piece is critical. And there's some psychological and scientific principles that we have to follow in order to be effective communicators in our business. And I will share one or two of those. It all depends on how much time I have left, Billy.
You got about 3 minutes left, Brian.
Excellent. So I'll share, here's the biggest one, right? I'll show you the biggest one that I see violated the most, and that is most business owners, and our clients are like AT&T, Cisco, like see really big companies, right? Citigroup, Citibank, all of these large corporations, and we see the same thing, right? Regardless of the company or the country, that is they woefully neglect the audience. They are so focused on themselves. I'm going to ask you to be hyper-focused on the audience. What are they looking for? What things are happening in their life that you have an insurance product or service that can be of the best benefit to them if you happen to be in that industry? Don't focus on yourself, your product, or your service. Think of it as like you're going to visit the doctor, right? When you go visit the doctor, they don't say, I'm the best knee surgeon on the planet. Sit up on this table. I'm going to take an x-ray. I'm going to get started on your knee right away. That doctor is talking about his greatest value and service. If you have a shoulder injury, you could care less about his ability to do knee surgery. So what you want to do is inquire. That's what the doctor does, right? So how are you feeling? What else happened? Well, how long has that been a problem? Well, what have you done to fix it? They ask lots of intelligent questions, and through their questioning, they begin to discover what the issues are. So as you're having sales conversations and sales presentations, don't focus it on your product and your services. Focus it on them. Ask questions. And then once you discover what the issue is, then you begin talking about solutions, because that's when it matters. If the doctor starts talking about his ability to do knee surgery upon you entering into the office, you have no interest in that. You have no interest whatsoever. However, if he takes an x-ray and you can see on the x-ray that there's scar tissue on the knee and there's some ligament damage, now you're asking the doctor himself, what can you do to help me? All the doctor did was expose the issue. He discovered it on your behalf. Now you're asking him for help or the sale, and he doesn't even have to ask you. So I'd ask you to be hyper-focused on the audience and take an x-ray to find out what the issue is. And once the issue has been discovered, only if you have a solution that can genuinely help them, then you offer that solution. But if you take the x-ray and you do a great job of questioning, that's what I call the x-ray, you reveal the issue through questioning. Once the problem is revealed, they will more than likely ask you for a solution before you have to offer one yourself. And that's what I call effective sales communication.
Excellent. Excellent.
And I'll stop there.
All right, Brian, thank you so much for that. I absolutely appreciate it. Guys, if you want to know more about Brian's company, just go to inspirenation.org, and it's on a couple of places. It's on the actual ice cream that talks about it, but it's also on the recorded session. Click on his photo down there, and it'll hyperlink right to his website if you guys have any questions. But, Brian, thank you so much for being on, and now I'm going to bring on Tom Baker. Okay, but thank you, Brian. I absolutely appreciate you being here.
Not a problem.
Okay. All right, so Mr. Baker, let's go ahead and get you online here. Let me find you. There you go. Okay, Tom, how are you?
Great, but just been enjoying. Listen, I'd be content to do that for the rest of the evening.
Oh, no, we need your wisdom and expertise as well. All right, so you know tonight we're talking to business owners, faith-based business owners, about ego, emotion, expectation, and communications. Now, I know you're ready to go, Tom, so I'm just going to turn it over to you and let you do your thing.
Billy, I appreciate it. For the last 13 years, I've had the wonderful opportunity of working within the insurance industry. Our company has produced the first talent management system for the insurance industry. So working with people is something I've done for all of my career, and it's something I'm very passionate about. And there's some things I've learned through the years that I really appreciate Billy giving the opportunity to share, because a couple of things I'd like to say are the underpinning, they're the foundation of everything that I've done over the last 30 to 40 years. I started out as a young man in retail, which retail is a wonderful place to learn about people, and got my first management position at 19 years old. I was general manager of Bostonian Shoe Company when I was 20 years old. And Billy, you were talking about good ego and bad ego, and I was 100% bad ego. I was so convinced I knew all the answers in life as a 20-year-old that I didn't realize the truth was I didn't even know what the questions were. And it took me the remainder of this 40 years to figure out how little I really know. But at that time, I knew everything. I could go into any retail location that this company was with. I could turn their business around in within 30 to 60 days. About 20% increase over what they were doing, no problem. The problem was that bad ego, the real tragedy of it, if anybody's caught up in the same thing that I was in bad ego, the people that really suffered from my bad ego were my employees. Because instead of growing them and seeing them become everything that God had for them, the only person that was succeeding in that situation was me. And I could go into a location and I'd stay there maybe for a year, and business would be up, everything would be great, but as soon as I would leave to go somewhere else to put that fire out, that first location would go almost as low as it was when I first came into it, because I had never really built people. It was all about me and my career. And that took a lot of breaking in my life to get beyond that, because I thought that was a good ego. I thought that was a great thing to be so convinced and make me successful that really is the people around me that God was really wanting to be successful. In many ways, I actually hurt people that God put in my path to bless. I actually hurt them because the focus was on me and what I could do and the benefits to me. And later, God really began to show me one particular incident that I look on as kind of a turning point in my life. And somewhere around 1976, as a retail shoe store, Valley View Mall had just opened in Dallas. And the company I worked for had three different locations in Dallas, and all the managers had come together to hire one person. Her name was Susan, and she was going to float among the three locations. Well, I wasn't that crazy about her, and I said I really didn't think that we should hire, but the other two said yes, so I had about a third of this person's time. And every time Susan came to work in my store, she failed miserably. Everything she did, it was like she could do absolutely nothing right, which only fulfilled my belief that she was not a good hire. So I'd talk with some of the other guys, the other store managers, and they say, oh, Susan did a great job for me. And I thought, you've got to be kidding. She does nothing right when she comes to me. You guys must either have low standards or must be looking in some other direction, because I got to tell you, this person is not a winner. And every time she came in my store, she actually became a loser. And what I found out later, as God began to prepare me for the next stage in my life, which was a wonderful time of pastoral counseling. My wife and I were able to spend about 20 years together and doing marriage seminars, and had some radio programs and different things that all centered around marriage and family counseling and ministry. And what God began to show me that I had to change in me was what my expectations were doing to people. And I look back on Susan, and she was a failure in my store, not because she did not have the ability or because of anything she did. She was a failure because in my eyes, she was a failure. And I learned that people generally become who we expect them to become. And in psychology, I learned that as it's called the self-fulfilling prophecy. In Scripture, I learned that as seek and you shall find. Now, Jesus was teaching on marriage when he said, ask and it's going to be given, seek and you shall find, knock and the door is going to be open. But I find that that's very much true in life also, that what we look for in life is what I find all the time. And what I find all the time is a really good example of what I'm looking for. So if I want to find out what I'm looking for in life, check out what I'm finding in life, and that's going to tell me what I'm looking for. And I thought back to Susan. I thought, you know, all I found in her was failure, lack of commitment. She wasn't good at her job. She wasn't smart. And I realized the reason I found all those things is because that's exactly what I was looking for. And rather than a good ego to stand on the person that God had called me to be as a leader, I was very caught up in the bad ego of how is this going to benefit me? And I saw this person as a threat to my success. And she actually became, and I watched her, she was so frustrated. She tried to do a good job. And she had a really difficult time doing that because I was seeking things in her that were not there. But because my expectation of her was so consistent and so prevalent and powerful, she actually became the failure that I believed her to be. And one of the things I've realized as a Christian in ministry and as a business owner, we must guard and value the expectations that we have for one another. Billy talked about setting staff up to fail because they don't have enough training, that they haven't been prepared properly, and so there's not a valid basis for that expectation. When we do that with staff and we set them up to fail because we want success from them in an area we have not prepared them for, we are not the servants that God's called us to be. If we're going to be great, we've got to be a servant. Jesus teaches us that in Matthew 20:26. And it leads us to look for the things that are the failures rather than the gifts and the callings and the things that God put those people in our life for. And your expectations on others is so powerful that even though Susan tried fighting against it, she really wasn't successful. Eventually, I had to let her go out of my store. I said, look, I can't have this person in my store. She missed out. She lost in that. I lost in that because probably she could have been one of the very best employees that I had. But I did something I had no right to do, and that was to seek out the negative expectations in her, because that led her down a road that did not benefit her, me, the kingdom of God, or anyone else. And there's a couple of studies that were done as I began looking into this, again, as I prepared for the years my wife and I did the marriage ministry. And there was a school teacher back in the 50s, and they took a group of elementary school kids, put these children in their class, and they said, oh, now this group, 12 or so, these kids have tested high. They are really, really smart kids. At the end of the experiment, those children had increased 4 IQ points over the other students. They were randomly selected. They weren't special. They weren't smarter. But because the teacher believed they were smarter, they increased 4 IQ points over the other kids. They took a group of hardcore unemployed men. These guys were losers off the street by any natural measurement. Put them in a welding shop, told the foreman this group tested out high aptitude. At the end of the experiment, that group of men that the foreman believed had tested out high, they had better attendance, they did a better job, they showed better leadership skills, they got along better with people, they missed work less. They did everything better than the other group. And here's what's amazing about that. When they asked the teacher and the foreman, did you see them as different? Both of them said, no, we're not aware of anything that we did differently. And the fact is, they not only did something differently, but they were looking for something in those people, and they found it when it wasn't even there, the good stuff. But it works positively, and it works negatively. As an employer, and I say this as a business owner, and I say with all the passion, because it's, when I hear expectations, that's probably one thing that God has put on my heart more than anything else, because I used to have so many negative expectations of people, part because I didn't train them, I didn't do my job in getting them ready, and part is I just let my ego get in the way, and I compared them to me or compared them to what I thought, and I actually set them up for failure. But as a business owner, we really do not have the right to view the staff that God's put in our life. We do not have the right to see them any other way than the way God sees us. He sees us as a brand new creation. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things have become new. How many times does your staff come in and say, man, I know what this person did yesterday, and they did this the day before, and that just becomes our expectation of them today. You know, sure enough, they live up to it. So that fulfills that belief, and then we just keep carrying it on. We owe it to our staff to look, as Brian said, do that x-ray, find out the needs in that person's life, and then you become someone that fulfills those needs and builds up that person, you're going to have an employee for life. I was talking to one of my agency owners just recently, and she said, this is one individual in my agency. I got to tell you, I don't like dealing with her. I don't think there's a chance in the world she's ever going to make it. I don't like her attitude. And she just went on about the things that she did not like. And I tried to very reverently with her because, yeah, I understand there's a dynamic here of respect that I want to have for every business owner, every agency owner I work with. I said, dear lady, I want to tell you, as a business owner, particularly as a Christian business owner, you gave up the right to have anything but an expectation that lines up with God. You put this person in my life, and I'm going to keep looking for what you see, and I'm going to keep looking there until I find what you put there, and I will not look at this person through negative expectation. And she looked at me kind of strange because nobody ever told her that before. And she said, but I'm the owner. You know, I can see everyone the way that I choose to. I said, you're right. You can have bad ego. You can have bad moods because this person would put her in a bad mood because she believed that what had happened yesterday was going to carry over into today. I said, but the person that's going to suffer in this is not just you. It's her. And it's the other people it's going to influence. Because the opposite of that is also true. When you say the four most important words, your staff, they may not know it, they probably don't know it, but every one of your staff know this. They want to hear from you, I believe in you. Your staff need to hear that on a regular basis. And let me tell you, when they don't deserve it is when they need it the most. Because if you keep speaking that life into them and that positive expectation of doing an x-ray, seeing what the needs are, building up that person, let me tell you, you're going to have something that's someone that's an employee that will give you energy, that put money in their pockets and your pockets. And this doesn't only work for owners. For the employees that are listening, and you come into work thinking, oh, I know what my boss did yesterday. My mood's not going to be so great. I know how it's going to be today. You don't have the right to see your boss any other way than the way God sees them. And if you will change your expectation, become a servant. To become a servant means you understand someone. And to understand someone means you have to learn to stand under them and receive from them. If I'm not willing to receive from you, I do not understand you. And if I do not understand you, I don't understand why God put you in my life. And if I don't understand why God put you in my life, I can't fulfill what he gave me. As the business owner, as whoever I am in that, I can't fulfill my purpose unless I stand under you to understand you. So expectations, absolutely the most powerful force in human interaction. They can transform your world literally overnight, depending on what you expect. Is tomorrow bleeding through to today, or is today and tomorrow and the next today a brand new day in Christ? It will change your world. And Billy, I found it'll change the world of the people around me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Tom. I know you could have gone on for another hour, but man, great words. Absolutely great words. And, you know, it goes back to what you were saying about that expectation. You know, even though our expectations need some kind of historical purpose, imagine if God had no expectations for us. If God said, you know what, you're broken, Billy, so I'm not even gonna allow you to do any of this stuff. I'm not even going to waste my time on you because you're broken. Man, if God ever took that stand, I'm done. I mean, I don't have good stuff I can stand on every day. Say, no, believe in me. So I'm just blessed that God gives us mercy and grace. So
absolutely.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Tom. I appreciate it. Okay, so that was Tom again. You can go out to inspirenation.org or under the ice cream or under the recorded sessions page of ice cream, and you'll see Tom's picture out there. Click on his picture, and it'll take you to his website if you have any questions at all about that. So the next gentleman that's going to speak to us is my mentor, my actual personal mentor, the person who's responsible probably for me even being in the insurance world whatsoever. And I'm not going to steal any of his time. I want him to be able to talk as well. But this is Ron Allen. And, again, I'm just so blessed to have Ron here with me tonight because he has been such a major, major instrument in my life. Ron, are you with me, sir?
I am here. Good afternoon.
All right. Good evening. Perfect, perfect. So, Ron, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And then the same question for you. How has your ego helped you or hurt you in business and in faith? And then give us a little something about communication that we can share with our employees and staff and other folks around us, please.
Oh, thank you, Billy. You know, really, I don't want to talk. The previous speakers have shared so much information. I am really enjoying this. This should be a one-month event. Just about my background, I'm a former high school teacher in the state of Illinois. I left teaching and went into the insurance business. I started with the Allstate Insurance Company as the second African-American claims adjuster. And after 2 years, I was promoted into sales, and I became one of the first 10 sales agents with the Allstate Insurance Company. So I maintained a business relationship with them for 42 years. The last 10 years of my work experience with Allstate, I was an agency owner because in 1999, they changed everybody over into independent agents. And that's where I had the privilege of meeting Dr. Williams and he and I becoming friends. So with that, I'm going to make that very short and go into ego. And I think that is a segue into ego. All of us are doing great things. We have great talents, and we look for great progress from everyone. But I shortened my bio because if you got a three-page bio, then you've got an ego problem. So Billy talked about good ego and bad ego. And the word ego really is a noun. But, see, I view it as a verb because it's an action item. It's this thing within our self-being that really dictates how we act, our emotions and everything, and it's growing and changing. And it can be very good or it can be very vicious. And we have to learn, as Billy said, the number one thing is discipline. We have to learn how to discipline ourselves and control our ego. I think of ego as an attack dog within the body. And that's what it means, evil, go, you know, attack, sick of. Well, it can tear up your whole life. It can mess up friendships. And that's why we have to have processes that can control those within ourselves and our daily lives. I thank you so much, Billy, because you talk about written processes. And those that are on the phone, we all should have, and most of us do, hopefully we have a business plan. And that guides us through the process of our business each day and guides us into our activities that will make our business profitable. But what we don't have, many of us, we don't have a written plan for our personal lives when we go home and family and whatnot. So the Bible is one of our written plans that's already been written for us. And if we can keep that in our daily lives, so when we're at the business, then we open up the business plan, we go through our work manual, when we go home, on the way home or just before dinner, reading the Bible or at night, and hopefully that will guide our personal life and help us to be stronger individuals. But I've enjoyed all of this, and I think in terms of ego, we have to think of doing business is it encompasses so many emotions from people within yourself and outside with people. You encounter almost every emotion during the day. You get hate, dislike, fear. And these things are usually a deal breaker. These feelings will escalate if you're talking to people and engaged in conversations. And a lot of times, if you're not careful, it will cause your conversations to break down. So going into the Christian aspect, you must enter into negotiations with your anchor must be your religion, your religious teachings, and you must go forward in this conversation using the ethics of love and let that dictate and guide you in your conversations. I tell people, or I suggest to people, that if you have time during the day, and say for 1 week every day, after you have a conversation with someone, write down the emotion that you're feeling afterwards. Are you feeling good about it? Are you feeling hate? Are you feeling anger? Don't like this person? Love this person? And just toss it away somewhere. Just put it in your drawer. And at the end of the day, and you say, well, what kind of day did I have? I had a great day. Now go through and look at those emotions that you felt during the day. Now, are those emotions that you have listed down there, if you have 30 emotions, are 25 of them negative emotions? Didn't like this person? Hated them? So, and that tells you, see, sometimes the ego, again, can be very deceptive. And when you're looking at things and you're looking at the emotions that you're feeling, then that can tell you that, hey, what went wrong? And also you can go back and say, well, why did I feel this way? It gives you a chance to reevaluate what you went through and how you are going to adapt to that. And most people, Billy, I think you were talking about the past and how that affects our ego, and that is true. It's a very important part in affecting our ego. But we have to remember the most important thing in life is that the past does not represent the future. And the past is only going to come forward into the future if you bring it forward. So we can clear for all of us, no matter what your age is, you will think that most of your life, the majority of your life experiences, probably 70-80%, are in the past. I don't care how old you are. It's in the past as far as your experiences. Now, if you bring those experiences forward into the present, then you're going to propel them forward into the future. So some things we just have to learn how to let go. And that goes back to our Christian thinking, is do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and let the bad things go. You cannot let them feed upon your thoughts and your emotions and your ego. Billy, you talked about how has your ego hurt you or helped you. And I think that most of us will look at the fact that our egos really, really was a detriment, you know, to some of our business dealings because we let them come into play when they should not have. And I'm no different. I couldn't name one specific thing about my ego. I am very happy that my ego at the time allowed us to build up a friendship because you gave me a tremendous compliment saying that I was your mentor, and I was happy to share with you anything that I could, but I look now, and you have not only become a mentor to so many other people in the world, you've also become a mentor to me. And so,
well, I don't know about all that, Ron.
The teacher, you know.
I'll take your word for it, but I don't know about all that.
The student has surpassed the teacher, and I feel blessed that I, in some way, became a part of that. So thank you very much for all the work that you do for everyone, because I'm a seasoned insurance person, and most of you will gather that, but when I tell you that I worked for 42 years, so I'm an old-timer, and when I was growing up in school, they used to talk about the three R's and reading, writing, and arithmetic, and some of you may remember that, but now I think of, I've changed in my life, and the three R's that I think about. Number one in my life would have to be religion. The number two would be receiving good information. And the third one is respect. And I think if we can bring all of those into balance within our lives, then things are going to be well. Because don't worry about past failures for all of you that are maybe not at the level that you want to be and having some hardships, because people fail. But that doesn't mean you're going to fail tomorrow. I think the most notable thing and the most recent thing in the news is our new president-elect, and it's out there that he's had so many bankruptcies and everything. So this guy failed and failed and failed, and now he's been elected president of the United States, or my greatest basketball hero, Michael Jordan. All of you recall that he was kicked off the basketball team. They said, hey, you can't play when he was, I don't know if it was high school or elementary school, but they said, no, you can't play on this team. But he worked and he worked, and he was able to get to be one of the greatest of all time. So these are the things, if we have that strong religious anchor within ourselves, we can constantly reach back and gain that energy that you were talking about, Billy, that energy that will make us successful. Because we have a difficult time in life, and just to share with all of you my philosophy, as we worked in, some of us are in the insurance business, some of us are in other industries, But capitalism right now is one of the most dominating forces in the entire world. But you talk to people, and I agree with them, the problem with capitalism and the inherent vice in capitalism is that we have more bankruptcy within our country and within that system. And I think the program that you're sharing with everyone is that that begins to help us to get past this moral bankruptcy, which we all need. If we're going to have Christian values, let's not be afraid to take them into the everyday life and into your business life. And I'd like to move over and use that as a segue into the communication, because we all know that it's very difficult and not really recommended that you go into your business life and wear your religion on the sleeve. Okay, I can understand that. But my religion and your religion is still your religion, and you're not going to go to the workplace, hopefully, and say that this business or this service or product that I have is going to supersede my religion. No, that shouldn't be. One study that I saw last week, it was saying that in America, our business, our corporate values have gone down so far that it's acceptable to tell lies in the corporate world. I think that's terrible. That just shows where our world is. So are we going to be a part of that? And we're from the insurance business, Billy, so I share with you one thing. If you watch TV and you watch the ads and you look at all these major insurance companies that come on, and I'm speaking in the P&C field, they come on and say, well, if you go with GEICO, I can save you 15% on your auto insurance. If you go with Allstate, I can save you 15% on your auto insurance. If you go with State Farm, I can save you 15%. Isn't there a conflict there somewhere? All of these companies say, hey, I can do it. Somebody's got to be wrong. Somebody's got to be cheaper. But this is the exaggeration that they put out there, which is allowed. And there are many things that go on in the business world where they maybe withhold some truths from the client. Me personally, the business that I ran as an independent agent, this was not the way that I wanted to do business. Again, going back, my main idea was to make sure that I followed the golden rule of doing unto others with all of my clients. And if I did that, then maybe I lost the deal, but I had people that come back to me 5 years later. Hey, Alan, I remember you because you sent me somewhere else and what, and I thought that was so good of you, and they were able to take care of me, but right now I have some other services that I need, and will you help me out? So it works its way around. And when we talk about faith-based business, remember that I know especially in the Old Testament, they talk about the philosophy of helping others. We have to be charitable. Our society right now says, what's mine is mine, and I'm going to get all I can. I don't care wealth, property, assets, and you got to get whatever you can. Well, that's really not the way that the Christian person should try to operate. When we look in the Old Testament, if we even look at Joseph and the story of Joseph and how he went from a middle-class income with his family, and then he got sold into slavery, so he went all the way down. But he came back up, and he was one of the most powerful men in the world. And he had under his control most of the assets and food and wealth at the time. And he was able to help his nation and other nations during times of famine because God had blessed him to be progressive and given him the vision that he could prepare for that day. So this is the thing. In my opinion, we in business have to be charitable still. I know it's all, we're all trying to make a profit, and that goes back to the ego thing. Sometimes we get hung up in too much profit that our egos have taken us away from it, and we're thinking about get, and we're not thinking about help. So in order to make our world better, which is where God wants us to be, then we have to think about doing and sharing and helping others, and that's how Billy's relationship with me began. because we were in a situation where I was able to provide some support, and now look what he has developed into. But if I
guys, let me share this with you, Ron. I'm not gonna. We'll just go a little bit over, but I gotta let people know what happened, guys. When I first got out of the military, went into work for Allstate. I was what they called an AMBC, an assistant marketing business consultant. My job was to go out and train insurance agents on how to run a better business. Well, because I had been a recruiter in the Army, I had some understanding of how to run a business. I did have a multi-billion-dollar budget under me, but by the same token, I didn't know anything at all about the insurance industry. So once I actually started getting into it and realized, man, I really like this. Like, I had a passion for the insurance industry. I loved everything about it. And so where I was, I lived in Mundelein, Illinois, and I wanted to open an agency right down the street from my house. Well, at that point, Allstate had told me, look, in order for you to open this agency, you have to have this much money in the bank. I mean, it was just a crazy amount of money. But I think it was supposed to be a deterrent that said, I know he's not going to have this much money in the bank, so, we don't have to worry about that. And so I'd gathered it all and done whatever, and I was about $17,000 short. So I went to Ron, and Ron and I were talking, and I said, Ron, I'm $17,000 short. Ron opened his drawer, took out his checkbook, and wrote me a check for $17,000 and said, here, pay me back when you can. So when he says he did a couple of things to help me, no, it wasn't just a couple of things to help me. It was a major, major blessing in my life. And I leveraged that. I paid him back. Let me just say that first and foremost for you folks that are like, oh, I want him to write me a check. I paid him back. Okay, paid him back within about 5 or 6 months. But what it was it, I used that and leveraged that to be able to start the agency, and I always tried to follow those biblical principles of running a business. I'm not afraid to tell someone that I'm a Christian. I'm not afraid to tell a customer or a prospect or anyone else. I will not deny God three times before the rooster crows. That will not happen with me, okay? So yeah. I wasn't afraid of doing that, and I felt God had given me this passion to do that. So when I say Ron is my mentor, and it wasn't just the money. I mean, he's mentored me on so many things. He's told me, young man, I understand what you're doing, but you really don't have a clue you got a wild hair up your butt, but you don't know what you're talking about. So I mean, he's really been there for me through all kind of things. He introduced me to people that got me big major contracts. He's brought me in with National African American Insurance Association and had me speak before these major corporate leaders that I would never have an opportunity to speak in front of. So he has been a true mentor and a true philanthropist when it comes to both his resources and his influence and all those things. So Ron, don't sell yourself short, man. My life would not be where it is today if it were not for you and your faith-based practices.
Well, thank you, Billy. But see, that's not selling myself short. That's Billy and Ron Allen's testimony. Because believe me, folks, Billy was, we were in a business relationship. He was my manager, and at the time I was an employee. But Billy and I did not, we were not close friends. We did not go out to dinner. He had not been over to the house to meet my family. I had not been over to his house to meet his family. So for me to write that check was a leap of faith. And the Lord put it in my heart that this is something that I should do, and that was not something that I did every day. So don't all of you guys start, and ladies and guys, start calling me, because the checks are not coming, so as long as you know that. But it was something that the Lord enabled me to do, and you see how the seed that was planted, that the Lord helped me to plant, you see now how it's coming back and bearing fruit and being able to help each of you that's on this call tonight. So, Billy, I'm going to wrap this up, but I would like to say one thing.
Yes, sir.
If those of you that are in the insurance business, or if you're in another profession, our corporate society has a very big problem with trust issues and being transparent. And that's one of the reasons in the insurance business, that's why now we're all required to take an ethics course. We have to take an ethics course. That wasn't required in the past. But because we got so corrupt within our system, this happened. But if we were all running our business and our lives on a faith-based model, business model, we wouldn't be required to take an ethics course, because we would all be helping each other and doing the best for each other, telling the truth, giving the best products, the best services. So that's my take on this, Billy. I've enjoyed so much what everyone else has shared. I hope in some way I've been able to offer some small input to you and your listeners. So,
absolutely, Ron. Always a blessing to have you around, sir. Okay. All right, so guys, we're going to wrap it up here. And I just want to go over the five main purposes for a business one last time before we end, because I think this is so important. This is the key to everything. God has five main purposes for a business. Number one, passion. It gives us an outlet for our passions and the works that God has placed in our heart to do. And you can always read Romans 12, 6 and 7. It says, having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. So Romans 12, 6 and 7 says, whatever God has put in your heart, what passion or works he's put in your heart, that's what business is for. So that's number one, passion. Number two, product. God wants us to create and deliver goods and services that solves problems for other people. Number three, philanthropy. God wants us to give spiritually, physically, and financially to our churches, our communities, and for the betterment of everyone else. Number four, profits. Without profits, the business can't sustain the prior three main purposes. And so that's why we have to follow those biblical principles of saving. Think about Joseph. He knew seven bad years was coming, so he saved up during the good years. So not only did he help himself in the seven bad years, but the entire world came to him for those things. So are we saving? Are we doing all those things that God has told us we are supposed to do? Are we tithing? Are we making sure that we're leaving an inheritance for our children's children? Okay, are we treating others the way that we want them to treat us? So that's how your profits come about, is by following those God-based principles, and which starts with savings. A lot of businesses can't survive because they don't have a savings to survive. Okay, and I'm guilty of that as anybody, but you got to understand his principles. And then number five, personification. So he wants us to be a role model of his teachings and his principles. And when we can do that, it's amazing the doors that open for us, the contracts that came out of nowhere, the people that we meet. You know, when we're sitting down and we happen to mention somebody, well, you know, how's your day? Oh, I'm blessed and highly favored. Wow, okay. And now you start having a conversation about God. Next thing you know, you have a Tom Baker, you have a Ron Allen, you have a Brian Williams, you have a Pastor Rhonda Moore. You know, you have all these other folks that are on the call. She's going to be on in a couple of weeks, that are on the call that open up doors for you. So don't, if you're having struggles in your business, I'm going to leave you with this and then we're going to shut it off. If you're having struggles in your business, go back and read the Bible. Go back. And I can almost promise you any page that you open in the Bible will have something that relates to your business. Maybe you're not treating your staff right. Maybe you don't have written processes. Maybe you aren't starting a savings plan. Maybe your product and service, you're lying about how you're actually delivering it to the people or how it actually benefits the people. Maybe you're doing something that goes against the principles that God is teaching you on how to run your business. So start with that first. Start with your own ego, your own emotions, your own expectations, and then look at your communication. Are you being honest in your communications? Are you being diligent in your communications? And then make sure, first and foremost, before I guess any of that you're praying and asking God to give you guidance, to give you wisdom, to give you the right things to do and the right things to say, so that you're saying everything that he wants you to say. All right, so we're going to end it with that. Tom, Ron, Brian, you're all unmuted right now. So if you would, please, just take a few seconds and say whatever final words you'd like to say. So you're all three unmuted. So don't talk over each other, but say whatever you want to say. Okay, go ahead, Tom, you start.
Well, Billy, thank you, because I realize you have a platform for changing people's lives. And it's a privilege to participate in that.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. Brian, you on?
Yes, I'm just reminded of Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so does one man his brother. And I think that's been demonstrated on this call on multiple levels. So I'm just grateful I was able to be a part of it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for participating. I absolutely appreciate it. And Ron, any final thoughts?
very quickly, just thank you for allowing me to be here to share with you and your listeners, and not only to share information, but to learn new things myself. I appreciate being in the discussion with Brian and Tom and Billy. God bless you for the work that you're doing, and God bless those that are listening in because they have had the vision to come and get new information on how to change your life and how to change the world. Keep up
the good
work, Billy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Okay, let me let these guys get back to their night. Thank you guys for being here. I absolutely appreciate it. And we will see you next Monday where we're going to talk about relationships and education, both professional and spiritual. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.